One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
I'm Richard Dolan, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me for a follow-up breakdown looking at a whole lot of news that's happened in the last couple of days across the UFO topic, once again, is Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me. When it rains, it pours, huh?
Absolutely. Can't get you on for months, and then twice in 7 or 8 days comes along. And do you know what? This was initially going to be just, I thought, a follow-up. You know, let's go through some of the questions never got to last time and everything, but got a whole host of news which seems to have happened in the last kind of week or so. Let's fire through it, and then I've got loads of questions saved from last time as well that I'll try and get through as much as we can in the time we've got, Dan. But No better place to start then than the UAP Disclosure Act / hearings / political side of things. Other stuff, folks, for those of you who, to be fair, I'll address this now. I think some folks with the political stuff when it comes to UFOs go, oh, God, maybe it's a bit dry, or, you know, that's not their thing in the UFO topic. We have got spheres being debunked, Ross Coulthart's follow-up comments on the Tic Tac stuff, Gary Nolan on Jordan Peterson. MUFON Symposium has started this week, Dan, and I just want to get your thoughts on that, although the good stuff isn't really available to chat about yet. And then a fire at Area 51, which there's not a whole lot to chat about, but, you know, speculation runs wild there. However, getting into the stuff in Washington, there is some kind of tasty little sound bites and snippets from this, to be honest. So where do we start? The hearings that were due to happen in July are delayed. So those aren't going to happen now till September. When in September? I don't know. I know Representative Eric Burleson had mentioned it could be 1st of September. I believe that's a holiday, so there can't be any hearings on that day. I think he was just trying to say early September, and yeah, he went a little bit too accurate on that one. So there won't be any on the 1st, but we're looking at September. The big speakers on these hearings seem to be Burleson and Luna. And I don't mean as in they'll be talking, but those two seem to be doing the chatting in the media. And they almost seem to have, I don't know, I think for me, Burleson seems to be more positive with it, and maybe not vague, but, you know, pushing things forward, not overcommittal, whereas Luna seems to be a little bit more, we can't get people to come forward. And I believe she said that people were reluctant to come forward to even speak. That has now changed to she believes they have won. Definite, who has decided to come forward after she'd had the interview saying no one would, and they are hopeful of others. So it's a little bit higgledy-piggledy in that sense. But first off, in terms of the hearings being delayed, I don't think it has a big effect on anything.
No, I don't think so. Like, it's been delayed before. We'll get them when we get them. I would prefer them to wait and do a good job than to rush it and have a lesser hearing, you know? Mm. We want first-hand witnesses in these hearings. These politicians are saying the same thing now. So, yeah, it's looking good. The direction's good. But I do wonder who they're going to have. Who do you think they have?
Right. So,
to talk.
I imagine Jake Barber is the guy they've got. I think that will please some people and others less so. We'll get to some Jake Barber stuff. When I say Gary Nolan on Jordan Peterson, they talk about Skywatcher quite a bit in there, and there's some interesting points raised and brought up, but we'll get to those later. How would you feel first off then about Barber? being the guy?
Neutral. Like, I'd give it a 5 out of 10. I just don't expect them to bring much. I know the Skywatcher stuff, they apparently haven't got these big materials yet that they want to, the video where they can confirm that these anomalous things are happening. But I imagine Jake would be asked about the stuff that he spoke about in the Ross interview, recovering the egg, doing crash retrieval, stuff like that. That stuff would be interesting. I would just kind of hope that it's kept separate from the Skywatcher stuff, just because they're two different subjects. It leading him to doing the Skywatcher stuff, sure, it's relevant in that way, but I hope it's not just all about Skywatcher.
Like a recap of what they've been doing that we know already. You've not seen Nolan on Peterson, and correct. That might add some stuff to what you've just said there.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'll just say one of the things now, because I'll go back through it when we get there. Gary Nolan said he is still part of Skywatcher, which I think is reassuring, given he did say there would be reasons he would leave if he felt any of them were kind of, compromised, certain things that morally he wouldn't be involved with. And he's still a part of Skywatcher. And also, he mentions that he didn't think the initial content that was put out and available on social media, he says Twitter, is good enough in terms of data. Sure. He believes what they have got recently with new sensor suites and cameras is much better. So
I'm hoping this is something I hope from them, that, as Skywatcher has released their stuff, you've had various cinematographers and people getting in touch with them to say, hey, look, I can use this camera that I have. I'm a professional. I can shoot high speed and get slow-mo of faraway objects close up in detail. If Skywatcher didn't embrace that stuff, I would be dismayed. So hopefully in the next episode, we see that they've got these people on site, they've got the better equipment, and that they're learning and developing.
I don't remember. You can help me here. He mentions a video of an object that they say would be a sphere, that he says they used a high frame rate camera, and they capture it in the high frame rate camera going from one side of the screen to the other and then back again, to which he says, if that is one object and it is at the distance they believe it is, then it's traveling anything from 2,000 to 10,000 miles per hour. And they only captured it because they had the high frame rate camera. He said the other option would be someone really close to the camera has fired two ball bearings either side of the camera, which he's like isn't the case, clearly. But yeah, they are quite confident they've got something spherical going at an incredible rate across frame and back again. So that was interesting. I don't think we've seen that from them in their initial stuff.
That hasn't been released
this afternoon. So, I'll go through it in more detail in a bit. But if they've got stuff like that, that's going to help.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see that, because when you see UFO videos where it's a small thing that's either far away or close to the lens and it's like a bug or something, the conversation goes around, is it far away or close? I would imagine Skywatcher maybe had radar or something like that to see that there was something further out and that they're correlating the two things. But, there are easy ways to tell, because the camera will be focused far away, so anything close will be out of focus. So that's how you tell that it's something small and close versus something far away and big and fast. So we'll have to see it to judge, I guess, to be informed, I should say, not to judge. Hold it lightly, take it seriously, as I always say.
2025, people don't judge and jump to rash conclusion. So that's Barber. Do you think it's Barber?
Maybe. I could see him being there, but
it's not
who else. So Matthew Brown, I'd love to see him testifying about Michael Constellation. That would make a lot of sense to me. That's been where the most serious conversation is. Bob is someone that claims to be has been inside the program, whereas Matt Brown is just a worker who came across some stuff that he shouldn't have. And so this is kind of like a leak or something. So I'd love to see him talk about his experience in an open hearing, present some of the documents he's spoken about seeing. I think that would be really helpful. The other person I think I'd like to see up there is Stratton, but I don't know whether that would happen, because I guess he's knee deep in writing his book, right? Does he have time? I don't know.
So couple of things there. I've just wrote down the names. So do you think Matthew Brown being the guy who stumbled across the Matrix is like the Neo, and Barber's like the Morpheus who's already knee-deep in the Matrix and bringing him out? It's funny, as much as they're obviously, they are connected, they're two very different sides of a coin still, it seems to me, like Barber and his involvement, how he has been, and Matthew Brown almost still seems like a reluctant, I'm not going to say hero in that sense, but, you know, the reluctant hero coming forward to talk about, you know, the things he's seen and everything else. Mm-hmm.
The Snowden vibes.
Yeah, and the other one, Stratton, could be great publicity for Age of Disclosure if he decided to wait till then.
Yeah, absolutely. I sent you something this week that I think is worth mentioning, a UFO film by some heavy hitters in Hollywood that also premiered at South by Southwest, where Age of Disclosure premiered, and those guys have gone for a straight-to-streaming deal. So I'm thinking, if these big directors can't get their big film in the cinema, then what are the chances of Age of Disclosure, even more so than when we spoke last time?
One of the listeners had mentioned, Liam said, I can think one of the reasons Age of Disclosure is waiting. Imagine releasing it just before or after the new Steven Spielberg UFO movie that's coming out next year. That would definitely make an impact. In fact, I think I've just talked myself into believing that's the reason. So hopeful more than anything there. But I mean, I would doubt they would pin their advertising on a hearing. But again, if that was just happy circumstance, would that be a good time and place to say, look, we've got Jay Stratton at a hearing. He's one of the main guys in this documentary we've got. Come on, Netflix, let's get it released in September, towards the end of September. There's going to be some, you know, some chatter around the topic. He's going to be speaking in front of Congress. He's going to say some stuff. And then you've got him in the documentary as well. So that again, for me, it'd be one of those things of, if Stratton, I'd be very happy with Stratton. Listen, if it was Barber, Stratton and Brown, cool. It'd be an
interesting show, right? It's plenty to talk about from those three.
I'd like to see probably at least one more unknown.
An unknown would be amazing. I was going to say that. Just someone that we haven't heard from that has been speaking to these committees and is said to be a first-hand whistleblower. Let's get him up there. You know, Corbella's spoken about speaking to scientists from the program. Let's get them up there.
Yeah. Did Burleson not say that they're hoping to get the pilots of crashed retrieved craft in this
I think they're about, he said something like that, that he really wants very hands-on, very first-hand people.
I had the quote in my document from the last chat from my news. Oh, so here's what Burleson said previously. Until now, the only people who have come forward didn't have first-hand contact. But in the upcoming hearing, we will focus on people who have actually drove crash retrieval vehicles, handled bodies, and had direct contact. I don't think any of those three would cover that.
No. No.
Stratton
closest rumored. I mean, he says in the documentary for the trailer that he's seen bodies, but he's never alluded to flying these things, and I don't see why he would be able to if what we've been told about them is true.
Yeah, Barber carrying the egg and stuff like that, I don't accept that as driving crash retrieval vehicles.
Nope. It's driving by proxy. That's like having a second set of pedals.
Yeah, you know when you see those guys going along the motorway and they're driving like a big massive Arctic lorry or truck, and they've got 12 brand new Lamborghinis on the back of it?
It's like that guy then going
to the bar that night and saying, I drive a Lamborghini. Actually, I've got 12 of them. No, you don't. They're on the back of your shitty truck that you're paid to drive.
I'm thinking of Thor's hammer. You know, you can only pick it up if you're worthy, but if you put it in an elevator and the elevator goes up, is the elevator worthy?
I don't know about those three. Again, I'd love to hear people suggestions on who else, but I think we're probably hoping for some names of folks we don't know. Barber, Brown, Stratton,
Herrera, maybe
Herrera. Does that
he's connected to Barber a little bit, and there's been some interesting developments in his story that has taken it from really outlandish to actually I kind of want to hear this guy say this in an open hearing. You know, the more sensational claims are things that crept in as the game of telephone happened, but when Herrera speaks about it, he's like, no, we just saw these things. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I saw, but I'd like to find out.
I'm talking to Mike just now and trying to get him on.
Is he? Does it look like he's going to come on?
Maybe. But genuinely, maybe.
Not Joey should be able to help.
He's put us in touch, so I am trying to speak to Mike, but I get it's difficult. Speaking of Mike Herrera, here's what he tweeted a couple of days ago. So it was based off of Luna saying that it's... So Luna said, we've asked multiple people, they weren't willing to testify, they didn't want to be the only ones, or worried about safety, etc. And Mike Herrera, I think, put out an interesting tweet to say, I will explain why this is. First, Congress and the Senate have had actionable intelligence on the subject for the last 3 years. This includes who is involved, where the assets and biologics are, everything someone would need to plan and to execute. Congress and Senate sat on their hands while whistleblowers revealed themselves to only have retaliation, threats to their finances and well-being, as well as their families' lives endangered. Until Congress can grant amnesty, protections, and I mean physical protections, and funding to help these people stuck on the other side still provide for their families, it's a waste of time and exposes someone firsthand for no reason and subjects them to the negatives of coming forward. Members of Congress know what needs to happen, but they choose not to do so. That's pretty damning.
Very. And it's not the first time we've heard that. You know, a number of us has been speaking about how some of these people like Luna, you know, are pushing this for personal reasons, but they're not actually pushing on the intelligence they're being given to figure this out. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. It's just people throwing mud, right? Like, I'd love to know, but I don't.
I think what is interesting is, and stuff we don't get to see or necessarily hear too much of, is there are people, and I'm just going to throw names out there, these people, this isn't me confirming it for the love of Christ, okay? But there are people like Herrera and Grush and Barber and Brown all speaking to each other and getting in touch with each other and helping each other come forward and meet the right people. I don't doubt Corbell, Knapp, Burleson, James Fox, Coulthard. These folks are all involved in helping this stuff move around as well. But that can also be messy and get folks and wires crossed and things are going to happen, then they don't happen. It's a very difficult circumstance. And I think, again, it sounds maybe a little oversimplistic, but even like Herrera makes the point there really fairly that, yeah, we want Matthew Brown to come forward, but Matthew Brown gets a whisper in his ear. Okay, yeah, you want to do that? No problem, mate. Don't worry, we're not going to do anything silly to you. But see tomorrow, you know, your parents' house, you know, your parents' bank account, maybe they've got issues with it for a month. You know, that loan they're applying for right now, they're not going to get it. You know, your mate's kids. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that can happen. And then they've got to look and go, is it worth it? This is going to impact me. And it's easy for us to sit here and go, yeah, tell us where the UFO stuff is. But yeah, sorry if people can hear a beeping in the background at all. I have not muted my Discord on one of my computers, so I'm doing that.
Plus, I think, like, say Mike Herrera decides, okay, I'm going to be a champion of disclosure and I'm going to just bring everything out and tell my story in Congress in an open hearing. Unless that story can blow the doors wide open in a 100% believable way that everybody is on board with it, then I can understand why he'd be reluctant to share it. Because he's like, well, I'm not the, you know, the be-all and end-all of this conversation anyway. So why am I going to risk my parents, my friends, their kids for something that isn't 100% undeniable? I can understand that thinking. And this is why it's so important that we get people in there that have this kind of evidence that can blow the doors off this thing. If Lou told them months ago in the hearing where it is that they can go to find this stuff, they need to be going there to find this stuff. Because, yeah, stories are frustrating, but equally not having 100% proof is just a frustrating place to be, and that's where the UFO subject finds itself, right? We need that proof 100%, not maybes.
Yeah, and if Grush, I still say that if you went back to 6 months or a year or 5 or 10 years before David Grush sat and said what he did in front of Congress, if you said, we're going to get this, we're going to get someone sitting in a chair live under oath saying what Grush said, people would be like, that would be it, that would be disclosure.
Yeah,
it would all just cascade from there. We had plenty of folks online who have various different methods of talking to the public who all assured us that that was it. Grush had started a snowball that would be an avalanche, and it was phenomenal. But even my point is, even that wasn't enough. I'm not disparaging what Grush said, but even like to your point, it would need to be something even more than that. And I think short of someone sitting down at a table like Bob Lazar and literally bringing Element 115 out of his pocket and showing us it all floating on a table, I don't see what has the impact politically. It's stuff that we're not seeing or hearing that's happening in the background that's causing issues, causing waves. I mean, tied into that, Dan, just a quick update to kind of summarize some of that stuff. And Askapol's been doing a wonderful job, Askapol UAP with Matt Laszlo, following this stuff up on the ground in Washington. Some of the summarizations of what Matt's put together is a setback in the oversight efforts. Recent UAP related briefings have been postponed, whistleblowers are hesitant to testify, and the planned public hearing's been cancelled, which we know. The NDAA UAP disclosure push is happening, so we know Eric Burleson's working with Senator Mike Rounds to incorporate a UAP disclosure provision into the NDAA. They still believe this could be transformative, and I know you're going to go over that stuff, Dan. This is the UAP Schumer-Rounds amendment, the UAP Disclosure Act, which is now going on to its third attempt at being pushed through.
There's some lucky, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Burleson's been optimistic about it. There's a new House Intelligence Committee Chair, Representative Rick Crawford, who is not Mike Turner, who hated the topic and obviously got the last ones thrown out roundly. Also on those interviews, David Grush and Addo were mentioned. Burleson confirms that he and David Grush have met with Addo separately this year. Talked about past refusals by Grush to meet with Addo Director Sean Kirkpatrick. Burleson saying it was due to lack of trust, not evading Addo. And that was something that was brought up, you know, Sean Kirkpatrick and co saying they wanted to meet Grush and they gave him the options and Grush was avoiding them. But then, and that's something, you know, Tim Phillips may have alluded to. On or off the air with people around David Grush. But if David Grush doesn't feel he can go to those folks, and we heard plenty of examples of people who did, was it Robert Salas who released a recording of his interview with Addo? Yeah,
That's right.
And he felt, you know, he wasn't listened to. Well, he was listened to, but they weren't really caring. His testimony went nowhere. He wasn't too enamoured with what happened at the time, so you could kind of understand that. Can or would Grush testify again? Or do you feel that would be pointless?
He absolutely could. I feel like it might be pointless unless he's got anything more to add, like those bits of evidence or proof. But it would be interesting to get a Grush redux, right? After they've actioned a bunch of that tech, that information that he's given them and other people have given them, to bring him back and say, okay, this is what we found. I can't remember who said it in the last hearing, but they said that they followed up and didn't find anything as of yet. But even if it was that to Grush and Grush got to respond to that comment, I think that would be worth something.
Yeah, even Grush going through like various comments and actionables and saying, I said this, here's what happened or what didn't happen, to kind of clear his side of things up would be potentially interesting. Jay Stratton, that we talked about multiple times, Jay Stratton, formerly UAP task force leader, is one of the guys in the background of so much stuff that's happened over the last kind of decade or two. He had tweeted that, I support the historic bipartisan UAP Disclosure Act led by Senator Rounds and Senator Schumer. This legislation endeavours to give the public long overdue transparency on what the US government knows about UAP. It's an essential next step towards disclosure, not just for the American people, but for all of humanity. And then to show your support, please sign the petition at uapda.org/petition. I'll put the link for that in the description as well, folks. You'll be familiar with the website and stuff if you listened to the show before for UAP Disclosure Act.
On the petition, I just wanted to throw in there that over the past couple of days, I've seen To The Stars and Tom DeLonge pushing the petition a lot, which is to millions of people, right? They have so many followers, and it's probably the biggest kind of marketing push that it's getting. So I'm hoping a lot of people are signing it. What are the numbers on the petition? Have you seen them?
Oh, I've not signed yet because I only saw the link before. I will.
I've signed. But you've got to sign.
I'm not too sure.
And for Charlie.
Yeah. Get all the kids involved. Not a euphemism for cocaine, of course, as many folks will know, Charlie. from there, Dan, do you want to cover the UEP Disclosure Act stuff that's out just for a little bit of detail for folks?
So today we're told that the Citizens for Disclosure organization, headed by Danny Sheehan, that last night they said that the UEPDA is not being included this year. However, Burleson says that they're working on it with Senator Rand, so it hasn't been decided. However, there are three provisions in a bill numbered S2296 that was put forward by the Senate Armed Services Committee for the NDAA, and there are three little bits of UAP legislation in there. None of them are very big, so don't get too excited. If you want to go make a cup of coffee and just hearing this in the background, this is the moment, I think. So one of the requirements is that Arrow are currently required to do twice yearly briefings to Congress. In the future, according to this language, they're going to be required to include North American Aerospace Defense Command and United States Northern Command reports in their briefings. The first such briefing shall cover all anomalous intercepts since January 1st, 2004. So they're going way back with, I think it's NASIC, isn't it? Is the how you say it? But yeah, they're going way back, and this is going to be a big repository of data coming in. So that could be interesting. The other one, two or three, the Arrow director within 180 days of enactment is to, and I quote, issue a consolidated security classification guidance matrix for programs relating to unidentified anomalous phenomena in order to support increased reporting on unidentified anomalous phenomena events by ensuring individuals, members of the armed forces, and other federal employees have adequate understanding of the constraints they would be under when reporting or discussing such events. So basically, guidelines for the people that are working in the US military and various organizations to come forward so they understand what they're going to be doing and what's required of them. Then we have section 1561, which is a revision on an existing law. That revision initially required all of the intelligence community and the Department of Defense components to provide UAP data immediately to Arrow and to the National Air and Space Intelligence Center. Whereas they're changing it a little bit. The revision adds the requirement that such transmission of data occur in a manner that protects intelligence sources and methods. So they're saying just in a secure way, and it removes the requirement for reporting such data to NASIC. So essentially saying Arrow is the only place that's heading up this UAP kind of stuff. NASIC is going to now pass this stuff to Arrow, and removes reporting requirements that were kind of out of sync with those stated by Arrow initially. So it's just a bit of cleanup, really. There's nothing big there. They're not saying they're going to go kick doors down of the Air Force or anything. It's really pithy stuff. But welcome back from making a coffee, if that's what you choose to do.
Yeah, quick coffee. Thank you for that, Dan. The devil is in the detail, and folks like to know that stuff, definitely. In terms of the UEP Disclosure Act, the bigger picture then, I hadn't seen the update from Sheehan from last night, but they don't expect it to be at all involved in this year's NDA.
No, according to Sheehan and that group, it's a done deal that it's not going to be going forward this year.
That doesn't disappoint me. And not that I'm excited that it's not in. I'm just like, it's a little bit like Arrow are releasing a new report. Okay. I've seen them before, but like you say, third time's a charm with this. The two big elements of this, the eminent domain, is a little bit of, I don't know, a red herring. It's just it's not necessary because it's part of the whole constitution stuff in the US anyway. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially, folks, again, if you're newer to this, eminent domain is they can go and kick down doors and get stuff back from private contractors or whatever, that may be alien bodies, tech, all that kind of stuff. But they can do that anyway. Or at least I imagine they would have, you know, they could proper James Bond it and just put in secret agents and spies and shit to go and get that stuff. Is it fair to say, Dan, there would be stuff happens across the political spectrum that isn't done via red tape and due process and with the signatures of paper, and shit just gets done clandestinely under the cover of darkness?
There's a public face for politics and there's a behind the doors face.
Proper Mission Impossible style shit. We've got 100%. If you die, you die. We don't know who you are.
Essentially, this is what Jake Barber claims he was doing, right? He would be one of the guys in that pool, and he wouldn't be the only guy in that pool. He would have had support, guys with guns with him, co-pilot in a helicopter, someone that went down and strapped the egg in to be picked up. So many different personnel would be involved in this.
Yeah. So are you thinking it's not going to go through? It doesn't really change anything, though?
I would agree with that. It's not going to go through. We're in the same place that we've been. I think the hearings are probably our best bet, especially after hearing Ross interview Senator Rounds and hearing Rounds say, well, we're not putting the language in because we know more. We're putting it in because we want this piece of legislation, if it passes, to be able to say, yeah, if anything was going to come out, it would have come out after that legislation passed. There's nothing there. That was his kind of talking on it. I'm not going to be too disappointed. And also, it's kind of, I'm going to use a rugby analogy, but Wales in rugby have just played like 18 games on the trot and just lost everyone. By the time you get to game 10, you're not disappointed in the loss anymore, right? They did just win, so congratulations to them. But I imagine, like, if Rangers are on a shit playing streak, you're not going to be disappointed by a loss after 5 losses. You're just going to be like, more of the same. All right, shrug, see you next week, you know?
I get that. And just to round off on that particular section, Eric Burleson on News Nation came across in a segment very frustrated at the lack of transparency on the Epstein stuff that is clearly dominating the news. And I kind of have to bring this up because it's relevant.
No one cares about that.
John Epstein.
I'm kidding.
I know. This guy, Jeffrey Epstein. So, like I say, not go into it. And I said to you before recording, Dan, I do get, I don't get any numbers, but the multitude of listeners to this podcast or watchers to this podcast, most just watch or listen and don't get in touch or interact, or if they do, it's pleasant and stuff. But I got like one message to say that they felt the last episode got a little bit political. I don't remember it getting political. One, because I don't care either side of the political spectrum, genuinely, folks, and I say this all the time, US, UK, I don't give a flyer, okay? I think because I've done a Trump impression about the spheres, maybe. But the relevancy here is that the Epstein stuff is dominating the news right now. Actually, to the point in the UK that we don't see much reported on the wars anymore that are going on around various different areas of the globe, because and even on social media, my feed has changed on social media from multiple different conflicts that were going on to nothing but Epstein. So sure. When we have said before that the toothpaste could go back in the tube and all that kind of thing, there's stuff that could come along and distract people. People are talking about the Epstein stuff. And even it seems to have frustrated folks in you know, the Republican Party. Again, I'm not going into it, folks. I don't particularly care. But Burleson seemed frustrated at this, whereas Luna seems to be backing the party. And I say that because he got asked by the news anchor, do you think we're going to get the answers first to the UFO questions you're asking or the Epstein files? Burleson gave a bit of a non-answer, but he cited he was frustrated because they were so close to the Epstein stuff and it got walked back. This, for me, seems to have split the party a bit. And I don't know, is that going to have an impact then on people who were working together on the UFO, UAP stuff? Because it was bipartisan, Democrats and Republicans working together. Fantastic for all of us on the outside of the US, hoping you do that. And then it seems to be there's a little bit of an issue now amongst the Epstein stuff in the party. Is that going to have a knock-on effect, or can they put that aside to discuss UFOs? I don't know, but it's certainly taken the attention away from it. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But I'm guessing time will tell.
Time will tell. I mean, you know, this Epstein stuff just makes me think of, we had that thing with the binders a while back where supposedly they were being transparent, you know, what was in those binders, if it wasn't everything, including the list and things like that. And like you say, that conversation's by the by. People are having that conversation now, but it does dent trust for the UFO stuff, right? But then on the other hand, maybe if Trump wanted to distract from this, he'd release some UFO stuff. It's a good time. We always get told, you know, I get messages from people saying, ignore the UFO stuff. It's a distraction from what Trump's doing. And I'm like, it's been going since 2017. It's not a new thing, you know? So not a very good distraction if that's what it is. But maybe this would be an opportunity. I don't know. Like you say, time will tell. I hope that was politically neutral.
Yeah, that's just, that, again, I am neither on the side of the left or the right. I don't care. I just like talking about UFO stuff, and that was relevant because it has distracted from it. The Ross Coulter follow-up, Dan, very briefly. We talked about this a lot in the last one. Ross Coulthart's comments around the Tic Tacs origin being Lockheed Martin, human tech, all got everyone talking and riled up for various different reasons. And just to read what happened on the follow-up on his News Nation Q&A, the producer Megan had asked him, so you recently mentioned the Tic Tac was a produced or manufactured by Lockheed Martin, but you never mentioned if it was under autonomous flight or piloted. Here are some quotes from Ross then in that episode. That's a good question, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know for sure. I've been told previously that when Tic Tacs, you see, one of the other things I want to clarify here as well is there are NHI Tic Tacs. A lot of people seem to be thinking I'm suggesting that all Tic Tacs are Lockheed Martin. That's not the case at all. What I was told, and I'm reasonably sure that this is the case, is that the Tic Tac was being operated, or is that Tic Tac was being operated by Lockheed Martin, and it's conceivable that that was being operated neuromeditatively or psionically by a human psionic, which is what I understand is the way that these retrieved non-human craft are being operated. Ross then says, goes on to say, it's not clear to me, though, whether this is a craft that was built by Lockheed Martin or whether it is Lockheed Martin testing the use of neuromeditative signalling, as our friends at Skywatcher called it, to operate one of these craft. I just can't answer that question specifically. All I can do is tell you what I've been told by my multiple sources, which is that the operation of the Tic Tac was being controlled on the day by Lockheed Martin.
It's tough, isn't it? Like, Ross has changed the word categorically, which he repeated twice. He said, I categorically know, categorically, that the Tic Tac is Lockheed. He's now changed that to reasonably sure, which is just such an about face. And to be honest, like, for me, I'll just say it. I have trouble taking his word for things now, because I don't feel like he's measured in the way he speaks. He'll say things like categorically when he means reasonably sure, and they don't mean the same thing, not even close. That's like saying maybe and definitely. It's like, had he said maybe in the first place, no one would have cared. No one would be talking about this. It would have just been a thing that went by and that would be it. But now everyone's talking about it because he misspoke, and that gets a little red flag from me.
There have been other folks that have had a lot of issues, I would say have been worse than that in the last year, multiple times. Sure. So yeah, across the topic, is that a larger issue that because we're getting people making multiple mistakes that I would say are worse than that, and you know what I mean, it's just
we can say it. We're talking about the UFO photos shown, right? Like that's an example.
No. I'm talking about the Venom movie that came out with the. No, yeah. So the irrigation photos that like Lou Elizondo held up, that was poor, and the chandelier stuff really poor. But is it just a case of then when someone who is seen to champion the topic makes a mistake, it's jumped on, and again, rightly or wrongly, there's a frustration that for a lot of folks, Ross Coulthart is a real credible go-to source of information. And like, to be fair, from all you said really there was Ross misspoke, and I'm trying to be on the fence here and just genuinely get the opinion. Is it unfair that people are jumping down his throat? Or again, is it we expect so much of him that he should have been more careful? Or do you think maybe perhaps Ross has just reflected on it? And it's hard to know without Ross coming out and saying this. I imagine this is the kind of stuff Bryce Zabel would follow up with when they chat again. Because Bryce can be quite good for kind of grilling Ross, which Ross will appreciate. He does that as a journalist to people himself. So I'd love to speak to Ross on it. I've not been able to get a hold of him to get him on yet. But for me, it looks like just poor use of language, or he believed that. And then has he been spoken to? Again, you can only speculate on it. Has he been spoken to afterwards and told, such and such has told you this. However, maybe consider this, and it's given him a little bit more information. I don't know, but it's really hard. But Ross came forward and said what he said based on the information he's got. He's protecting sources, but that's his choice then, isn't it? To not say that or say it. And if you're going to come out and say something and say, but I can't tell you how, I can't tell you why, I can't give you more context, you're always going to leave stuff open to interpretation and speculation. Yeah.
Some ways, I'd say it's similar to that irrigation photo, right? Like you're putting something up, someone's told you something about it, and you're making a statement. But like for me, I judge all these things separately. You know, Lou is Lou, Ross is Ross, so on and so forth. This isn't the first time Ross has done this now. You know, in January, we got the doors are going to be blown wide open, and then Skywatcher happened, and the doors categorically, the real meaning of the word, weren't blown wide open. And so, like you say, I want to hear from Ross about why it's changed. Has something caused him to change his mind? Or is he just so clumsy with his language that he said categorically twice within 5 seconds to emphasize it and was just not like, I think saying he misspoke, I'm being very generous. Like he said it and then he doubled down on it several times. And so I think his reputation in the community is kind of becoming a little bit dented because people expect more, you know, like you said, they expect more. So I would like to see this cleared up by Ross instead of just washed over and ignored and, you know, him telling people to go suck eggs and watch the Kardashians. I think it would do him a lot of good to be a bit more transparent about why he said what he said and why he's changing it now.
Do people outside the community care?
No. Absolutely not. This is just for the community, right?
And that's it. So again, you're pandering to the minority. To sit on the fence and be devil's advocate, as I like to be a dick about, but if I'm looking at it from both sides, simple question for me to Ross. If Ross said to me, cool, you can ask me one question, it would be, okay, what changed?
Yeah, and just have him explain it, because it might be completely reasonable.
But he also might not be able to.
I realize I want to. Yep. And talking of fuck-ups, I made one in the previous episode that I'd like to correct right now. and I think there's a talking point about it. That I'd like to ask you about. So basically, last episode, I said the Dave Fravor worked for Lockheed, so he would categorically know. I got my wires crossed a little bit. Someone challenged me on it. I went digging and found the clip where I got this idea from. So I'm just going to run through that now. In an episode of Weaponized not too long ago, Jeremy Corbell relays a quote from Commander David Fravor from when they were talking about what's called passage material, which is basically trying to influence people with things that isn't true. And Jeremy said, even Commander Fravor, where they're trying to convince him that Lockheed Martin had some sort of similar technology to what he saw, he laughed. He's like, if people knew my job right now, they would know that I know it's not true. So it was just, he said it to me as an alert. Have you seen this before? I said, I have. Do you understand what's happening, Commander? And Dave goes, I do. So that's the context of, you know, what I was saying. Dave Fravor apparently told Corbell that he would know. And so I ended up in a place where I'm like, where could Dave Fravor work where he would know that categorically that Lockheed doesn't have this stuff locked away? And to me, it only makes sense for him to have access to that information if he works in Lockheed. Apparently, though, he does not. I'm told it is private aerospace. But Pavel, who people would have met on here a few breakdowns ago, he set him for one. Great dude. He's got a show called Psychoactive where he went into this a bit. And he said that he had a source that shared that Dave doesn't work for Lockheed. So how would Dave know? I can't get my head around that quote.
Careful of the use of the word categorically.
Probably, maybe.
I don't know on that. And I think this is, again, it goes back into that as you peel the layers of the onion. I mentioned earlier, these folks being involved with each other. You then find out that such and such has a friend who works here. Oh, this person's actually done some work for this company. And it's really easy to be like, for example, Dave Grush, Dave Fravor, whoever, had a 6-month contract at that company. And you go, ha, must have been UFO related. Well, sure, not necessarily. They got a job because they needed cash and it pays for meals and family stuff and holidays. And yeah, they took a job not thinking, well, Lockheed Martin just deal with UFO stuff. You don't know what it was or why, but optics, there's a look to it, isn't there?
I mean, we already know as well, like from when Tim Phillips did the rounds on interviews where he said that DARPA did come and take Databricks off the Princeton. And Dave Fravor before has mocked those guys who said that happened and said that he was so high ranking on those in that carrier group that he would know if someone came on and took the Databricks. Well, they did, and Dave didn't know. So he could just be wrong here as well. So I was wrong to hang my hat on that and to be categoric about it. So, you know, a little transparency. It goes a long way.
But to the greater point, I don't know anyone in this topic outside of myself who always gets it right. Sure. So yeah, And only myself, because I don't tend to say much like that and sit on the fence with everything and try and look at both sides, which is why I don't get much wrong, because I don't have to say much right. No one's infallible at all. So it just depends where your allegiances lie, where your line is for tolerance for mistakes, and that's different for everyone across the board.
100%. And I think it depends how long people have been in the subject as well. Because we've said before, like, you know, one of my on-ramps for this was Greer, whereas I'm almost 180 on my opinion of Greer now. And so, you know, someone could have just found Ross and that's the first thing they hear from him. Everyone's in different places.
I like you used that 180 phrasing correctly. A lot of people use that wrong. People say, oh, I've done a total 360 on that. And it's like, so you're back where you started. But what they meant is a 180.
They could care less.
One you have not seen, Dan. Dr. Gary Nolan has just been on the Jordan B. Peterson podcast. Pretty big platform to be on. Jordan Peterson's known for being quite conservative views, all that kind of stuff. But he's had a UFO guy on. Quite interesting. I'll very quickly run through, Dan, some of the talking points. But for those who don't want to watch it because of who it is, don't have time to watch it, or if you can, I recommend it. The first 38 minutes is a background on Gary, his scientific work, and all the great stuff he does with immunology and his cancer work and everything like that, which is, if you've not heard that before, very interesting conversation. And it's very much Gary talking for the most part in this interview. And I think it sets a really good foundation for millions of people who are going to see and hear this podcast, who aren't aware of Gary Nolan, who are seeing it's about UFOs, to hear how credible an individual Gary Nolan is. And I appreciate I'm talking about this from a scientific and academic background, but it does for many people validate someone's opinion when they are so highly qualified in one or many particular arenas, to then have the UFO conversation off the back of it. And something I think is done very, very well across the full hour and a half, an extra half hour of content too, is Gary Nolan frames things very well before he makes a pretty explosive statement or shares an opinion or hypothesis. He's built to it really well. He's not just making sensationalist claims that I think would turn people off. So that's done exceptionally well throughout. He mentioned his first proper intro into the topic was offering to help with the Atacama mummy stuff, Dan. The little mummy that was about 12 or 15 years ago now. Interestingly, Jordan Peterson thought they were talking about the Peru mummies, the Nazca mummies from the last year or two.
Which a lot of people mix those up.
100%, yeah. So I think in that sense, I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. That was his initial go-to. But Nolan says to him, no, it was 12 years ago. He said that whole incident led to someone from an aerospace company coming to him to asking him to look for help, looking at scans of damage done to folks who have been in close proximity to UFOs. Later found out it was largely people who had been exposed to technology related to Havana syndrome, likely foreign adversaries employing microwave energy to cause illness. He said after that was found out, though, that it left them with a small number of oddities. Of the 100 or so cases, around 5 or 6 were truly anomalous, which I think in terms of UFO speak, I think a lot of folks would probably look at out of 100 sightings, 5 or 6 may be truly anomalous. Misidentifications, yeah. Starlink, spinning stars, all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Nolan talked about someone from the National Cancer Center telling him he's going to ruin his career talking about UFOs. Nolan thought this was a terrible attitude for a scientist to have, and he sounded more like a priest. And I actually thought Jordan Peterson made a really good point here, that there aren't many scientists around, but a lot of folks who act out the role of a scientist. And I think from a layman's perspective like mine, being involved in the UFO topic, that's always something I've mentioned, Dan, to you and others on here, that has frustrated me, that so many scientists turn a blind eye. Why aren't they more curious or interested in what is an incredibly fascinating question and subject? You know, it's like if someone suggests the idea that, oh, we could shrink this school bus and put it into the bodies of people and have children taken round by a teacher around the human Rachel. Body, anatomy park style, magic school bus style, and that's how they're going to learn biology. Rather than go, that's impossible, why isn't there a scientist going, oh, and I'm using an extreme example here, folks, I get it, but why isn't there someone going, yeah, let's try that, let's work on it, where are those people? Nolan brings up working with Jacques Vallée. He mentions he's his mentor. Vallée's thinking about, you know, is this potentially this phenomenon some manifestation of the human psyche or some other type of entity, not necessarily extraterrestrial, which I think is a good way to introduce that to that audience. I'll skip some of that stuff. Jordan Peterson asks him why he has derived ET as the most likely conclusion, and immediately Gary Nolan starts shaking his head before he's even finished the sentence and says, no, I didn't say that. And Peterson straight away goes, no, you didn't. That's right, you didn't say that. And I think that's really important, that the conversation for me, a lot of folks may have just left that there and let him have that. And yep. Nolan was like, no, I have never said, and I'm not saying, this is extraterrestrial. And for me, that's why I like when I'm on any other platform, if it's a radio show, someone else's podcast, whatever it might be, I like to discuss different ideas. And it's not just ET, flying saucer, other planets, just to get people thinking a little bit differently and grab their attention. Skywatcher, I think, is going to be some of the more interesting stuff people will listen to here, that maybe gives them a little bit of an update on Skywatching in general, because Gary Nolan mentions he is still a part of Skywatcher, which is good to hear, because like I mentioned earlier, Dan, Gary had said in the past that folks, if he felt there was any kind of moral issue to being involved with Skywatcher, or they wanted to shoot down craft, Gary Nolan would walk and not have any involvement with them. But that doesn't seem to be the case, so that seems to be a good sign.
Does he comment on, because I know before, he's been in some episodes of what they put on YouTube, but one of the results from watching those for me was like, how deeply is Gary involved with them? What does he do with them? Is it like day to day? Does he comment on that?
So he doesn't comment. I don't believe it's day to day anyway, just from various different interviews he's done in general. However, interestingly, he mentions that, and this is to answer your question there, he mentions that part of what Skywatcher do and have done are to do with measuring drone technology, including adversarial, their own technology, how drones can and may operate. He says, regarding the drone flap in New Jersey, Skywatcher was there. And bear in mind, I've watched this once and I was taking notes, but he said Skywatcher was there.
Barbara has said this as well, that they were
cool.
There.
And confirmed that many of them were certainly human drones and human technology, but some moved in ways which were harder to explain. Cool. I like to talk about
that's one of those things where I just want to hear more about it. Like, yeah. What ways? Can you show us the data? Like, how? Is it completely beyond a drone to move in that way? Or is it just really advanced tech? Like, what were we talking about?
I just got the gut impression he meant that it's really advanced tech. And I think we've kind of heard that from other folks recently as well. Yeah. He said, and I like this, he talked about don't ignore the anomalies, and he mentions almost every single Nobel Prize in physics and biology were won because someone followed the anomaly. And so I like that. He talks about the data a lot, but he gives some wonderful framing around it. He mentions, these notes are a bit haphazard here, folks, but again, you should go and watch it. He mentions that there is a signal that an individual as part of Skywatcher determined when in the military, that when it's released, an electromagnetic sequence is put off in a direction and these objects show up. So we know of the frequency, the dog whistle. I think he means James Fowler. I don't think he means Jake Barber. I think Fowler's the one who's came up with that stuff, it looks like. I'm not sure, but he didn't name names. He says, and this is where I think a lot of the community will be interested in this, and the folks listening and watching this, Dan, and yourself, he says the stuff that's on Twitter or X isn't good enough in his opinion in terms of being data or evidence. However, more recent data collected with better sensors and equipment is of a far higher quality. So that's stuff that I think we're hoping we're going to see in the near future. That'll pull back some of those lapsed Skywatcher fans, we could perhaps call them.
Or the fence sitters. I'm a fence sitter. So yeah. I want to be in their field with them looking up at these things, but I just need more. So sounds like it's coming.
I say a lot that I play devil's advocate and I sit in a fence stand. I sit in a very comfortable fence, a wide fence with a nice berth that I can swing around. Not one of those
comfy seat.
But it's right up your arse, not one of those. Peterson asks him, just to start finishing off, if he can talk about what he makes of all of this. What does Gary Nolan make of this phenomenon? Gary Nolan says a few interesting statements here towards the end. He says that there is something non-human here and that it's been here for a long time. And this is the kind of stuff I think folks on that podcast will take away. He says at the right time, towards the end of the recording, he mentions something can be here. And he says, I'm not 100% comfortable with sightings of biological beings because they look a little bit too much like us from a genetics point of view. He talks how there's more than enough data and evidence. And I've got here as a note, Dan, that it's sad as a species, given the way Gary Nolan's talking, I would hope other academics and scientists watching, and this is partly what Sol are there for and Sol are hoping to do, we can't get together and properly fund a scientific exploration of all of this independently, multinational, over a decade, and try and get to the answer of some of these questions. It's so split up. It's just a thought that came. Gary Nolan also mentions one I think that helps, one that covers the bases for those who are looking for a little bit more conspiracy stuff, but it's a fact. He says, I did get a phone call from somebody representing the White House because I was talking about something a little too on the edge, and they said, you need to just shut up, Gary. Now, he wouldn't go into what it was, but he mentioned he'd had that. He says,
it's a really interesting statement, isn't it? Because, who in the White House? It could be anyone, right? It could be just someone in the administration, it could be a civil servant, yeah. It could be a janitor, a secretary, but it also speaks to, you and I here, right, if we're talking and I say something completely by chance that turns out to be true about the phenomena that I'm not meant to know or no one is, I don't think I would get a call from the White House to tell me to shut up because, I'm just a lowly podcaster, right? Gary has a bit more weight as an academic, so... Yeah. That could bring up a flag to be like, no, he's reputable. He might be convincing people of this. But on the other side, why not just let him say it? It's that Streisand effect, right? When people get news removed from the internet and then people talk about the fact it's removed from the internet, so more people find out about it than would have initially heard about it. I feel like now people are going to be asking Gary, well, what did you say that made them call you and stuff like that?
Let me get to another point then. One thing he says before that, because he's a chronological, he says Earth is probably somebody else's property. Again, not saying he's saying these things for the first time or he's coming up with these thoughts originally. He's saying this on a huge platform that's not a UFO platform. If you go through the comments and the chat, you've got some folks who are hearing this stuff for the first time. And a lot of folks are like, didn't expect to see this in Jordan B. Peterson, etc. So there is another 28 minutes of content on the Daily Wire platform. I know a lot of folks in the US will know exactly what Daily Wire is. There you go. I'll just say I've managed to get a hold of that content and I've listened to and watched it for you folks. Some people who listen to this podcast will have access. Go and check it out. It's like bonus content. Gary Nolan mentions that he has a top secret clearance now and that he wasn't just given it for the sake of it. So again, Someone with a top secret clearance saying stuff close to the edge. It's one thing you're saying it, Dan, but I imagine someone with a top secret clearance.
If I had a clearance, that's a different matter, right? Yeah.
Even if you,
did
even
you
if
you had it when you said this?
There's not a timeline for it.
Okay, but cool.
Somebody who is, even if he says it before, someone who is capable of having or a potential for a top secret clearance, even just postulating and, imagine Gary at one point just said, maybe these non-human entities are coming through from a different dimension in these craft, which are blah, 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 blah. And somebody went, that's pretty spot on. Let's, shut up. No one gives a shit.
They come from the multiverse at the pinpoint of Florida and gives the coordinates. That's something to tell someone to shut up about. So I wonder what he said. I'd love to know. Just so you know, I dived in earlier when you were saying about Gary saying the percentage of the cases. Was it, what was the percentage again? Remind me that he said 10%.
He said 5 or 6 out of 100.
Five. Look at that. Okay, so 5 or 6% then, basically. So I just went back to the Blue Book investigation files. There were over 12,000 files. They explained about 9,700 of them, about 77%. The unidentified cases, and these aren't cases where they didn't have enough information. These are cases where they had information and they couldn't identify the object.
Yep.
701 cases, that's about 5.6%. So pretty much bang on.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to add is Gary's quote there, the Earth is is somebody else's property. That's interesting. That's something that Charles Fort said. Charles Fort, if people aren't familiar, was like an early 20th century writer and researcher known for collecting reports of anomalous phenomena. He has a book called The Book of the Damned, which I recommend everybody go read, because he basically just argues like, hey, science is science. There's data in the anomalies. Science has progressed because we study those anomalies. So we should take these cases seriously and we should look at them and collect them. So that's his kind of stance. Great guy. But he said, this is the quote from the Book of the Damned from 1919. Charles Fort said, I think we're property. I should say we belong to something. That once upon a time, this earth was no man's land. The other worlds explored and colonized here and fought amongst themselves for possession. But that now it's owned by something. Pretty provocative. He didn't have any clearances or anything, but
could be the the screen roll at the start of a movie that comes up, you know, like Star Wars style,
right?
That's yes. Something never left, and then it's like cuts there. So on the bonus content, he talks about Skywatcher a little bit more because Peterson's quite keen to get into more of that. He says, regarding this signal, the dog whistle, I'm presuming he means, they can film the sky for days with nothing. And then they send this signal, and within a certain period of time, these things show up. Something I've never seen or heard, and I don't even know if they would go into, is I wonder what that period of time is. You know, like flicking that switch, is it within the hour? Is it seconds? Is it minutes? Is it like half a day? You know, they put it on and then these things appear. And even then the idea that, are they pointing the signal in quite a narrow signal? Is it like sure. They point it at a point of the sky? Or is it almost like if you could visualize it like a laser pen type, you know, bang, it's there.
Yeah, if it's a laser pen or whether it's like a cell phone tower, right? And it just animates in all directions.
More of a
which
net,
one is it?
So that would be interesting to know more of. They talk about the object filmed on the high frame rate camera I mentioned earlier. Nolan said the simplest explanation for him is that something that's been here a long time ago came here from somewhere else a long time before that. And it's been here a long time, basically, sorry. He says, if a life form so advanced was watching us now, we would be the least of their concerns. They're probably watching us and seeing us as they were billions of years ago. So it's like, sure. Meh. Like, they talk about 2 years ago, the sensor systems being changed and opened up to try and spot more UAP, and they found the Chinese spy balloons. That closed a loophole, but, you know, what else could they find or do you find when you change the sensor suites? The US thought, you know, we've got this great system and we can find everything in the sky, and they actually realize you're missing these really obvious balloons. So there's a whole chat around the kind of sensor system side of things.
Sure.
Peterson, really, really close to the end, talks about DMT research and users of DMT coming into contact with beings from other dimensions. He asked Nolan about that a little bit. And they talk about like the machine elf stuff, but it's very, very short. He talks about...
Oh, that's a shame. Because that's very much like Peterson's bag, is to talk about Christianity, religion, how that was influenced by DMT and drugs and substances. And I used to be a real big fan of Peterson, and I'm surprised to see Nolan go on here, but I imagine it was a really potent conversation.
Yeah, he asked Nolan about it. I missed about a minute and a half, right? And the kids were in from school and they were running about. They somehow from that start talking about Grush and him finding out about the illegalities that were going on, that it was not necessarily all about where's the UFOs and where are the craft, but it was the transfer and use of funds inappropriately, that he came out to say not that UFOs don't exist, but they were being used as a smokescreen, and that's how that whole conversation got started. And he says, look, if anyone says there's no evidence involved in the UFO topic that's worth looking at, they haven't took 5 minutes just to look at it. And he finished recommending two books, because Peterson's genuinely really interested. He's like, actually, this is, you can tell he's found it interesting, he's took a lot in. And he says, Passport to Magonia from Jacques Vallée and Robert Powell's UFOs and Government Historical Inquiry. That's what he finished.
That's a fairly new one, right? Is that a fairly new one, Robert Powell's one? Passport to Magonia is obviously a little old.
I'll double check,
but I'm fairly sure Robert Powell's one is new. I haven't got around to that one yet myself, but Passport to Magonia is a great book. I find it a little dry, but it is very data heavy, and that's why. So it's a great read if you're interested in this phenomena.
2012.
That one. Okay, sure. I know that he's still releasing books, so I wasn't sure if it was a new one.
It's still a hell of a lot more recent than Passport to Magonia. Yes. Like, absolutely. In that sense, not as recent as Atlas of UFOs, folks, which is available for pre-order now. But yeah,
who wrote that? What is that?
No one important. Gary Nolan didn't mention it on Peterson raging, absolutely furious.
That's rubbish.
Yeah, not on his radar, obviously, yet.
send him a copy.
Yeah. So I'll give him one at the Soul thing in October. If anyone's going,
yeah, nice.
Give me a shout.
One of the books, just in case you tuned in right at that point.
I'll give him one in October. But listen, ultimately, I thought it was an interesting conversation. I know all these different platforms can be divisive. Personally, I like to listen to all kinds of people on all different platforms,
sure.
So I don't have an echo chambered opinion on stuff. So, but I'm quite comfortable. I know not everyone is hearing folks I disagree with in various different ways and shapes and forms, because they're not always wrong on UFOs. I want to hear about UFOs here. Yeah. So,
well, absolutely. I think Jordan Peterson is one of these guys. He's become kind of controversial in that like Manosphere podcast kind of thing. But he's talking about UFOs here, right? Like I say, I used to be a fan. I'm not anymore. I'm going to go watch this because I want to hear what he gets out of Gary about UFOs. So I'm sure it'll be interesting. He's a very good interviewer. It's the same with Rogan, right? Like, you might not agree with his politics, but he has interesting guests. And if you want to know more and ask questions like Carl Pilkington would in the UK, that's the place to go. Like, he's a good interviewer.
Yeah, got him long form. So yeah, good stuff. Beautifully produced, I've got to say as well. Quality was really good on the cameras, I thought. So yeah, I like to see people on these different types of platforms. Really appreciated seeing that interview on there. Dan, just to finish off, a couple of small bits of news before some questions. That MUFON symposium began on the 17th of July and it runs until the 20th of July in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's being live streamed and it's $99 for like the 4 days. One of the big appeals, one of the big things they're trying to really sell it on is a MUFON symposium exclusive material analysis of a 2023 unknown fragment taken from a private residential room in Moscow, Russia, claiming it's material of unknown origin. I'll chat about this next week once we've got it. I think it's going to be over the weekend you're going to see this. Personally, not holding out a lot of hope for this being anything massive or interesting. I think if MUFON had something big here, it would be done through different channels and routes. But I'd like to think it's something.
Maybe, I mean, it's definitely purported to be something, right? That's needed testing. So they have taken something and they have tested it. For me, if they came out and just said, like, look, this was nothing, we tested it and it was nothing, that would be a great example to set. Because it's still important that we find out about these things and take these things off the plate. But at the same time, it's not very good marketing, right, for next year if they're like, yeah, they just pretended that it was anomalous and then told it wasn't. So I'm curious to see how they're going to play it. I hope it's not like, you know, those Nazca mummies have been, where it's just been all over the place and it's hard to make heads or tails, even to the point where people are mixing up different sets of mummies now. So yeah, I look forward to it. They say they're scientifically led. I know Earl was great. Rest in peace, Earl.
Yep.
But they vary depending on who the investigator is for MUFON and stuff. So I'm curious. And especially now I'm stateside because I'm looking to be like, oh, I could actually get involved in MUFON now I'm over here, you know?
Thank him. And if you're not into that, then you can hear about starseeds over the weekend as well.
Cool. So, yeah.
Not my thing, but I know some folks like it.
That's what a starseed would say.
And $99. You know, it's a lot of money to some, to others not so much. It depends what you value. For 4 days of content, you could potentially check that one out. I'll be chatting about it next week though, and I'm sure you'll see plenty of it posted online. A freebie that's dropped on YouTube is James Fox's The Phenomenon, Dan, now available for free with ads, which is fair, on YouTube. So folks haven't caught The Phenomenon from when it came out. I'll go back and watch it again at some point pretty soon. I've got some stuff to catch up on first.
Is the program up yet? Is James going to get that one up there too?
I imagine so. I don't think it's available yet. But obviously James Fox had a lot of issues with distribution in the last couple of years and got shafted by folks. Oh. Still available to buy or rent.
Hold on. Wait, we're going to have to fact check ourselves in real time here. So I just went onto James's page just to see if the program was available. And he's saying that the program is available on YouTube. So I have to ask you, have we just mixed those two up now?
Have I just got the wrong one? Yes, I have almost definitely mixed those up and written The Phenomenon instead of The Program. But I'm not wrong, go. Because The Phenomenon is available on YouTube and has been for some time.
Cool. So they're both up there now. So yeah, great double bill.
The Program, James Fox, and just double checking, Dan, it is definitely before I... I'm not going to edit this out. People don't expect
this is the difference, right? We can be transparent that we're not always perfect. I think that's important.
Yeah, The Program just went live on YouTube, so spot on, folks. There you go, even better. Treat yourself to a double bill. But yeah, I think it's not the worst time to look back on stuff like that either, given hearings coming up in a few months. It's good preparation and whatnot. And Dan, there was a fire at Area 51, which got people talking over the last couple of days. Doesn't look like anyone was injured, which is good, but I don't know if we would necessarily hear that. I seen someone say it was like a gothic facility or something it was called. I don't think they had goths in there, folks.
Just the Cure. Just sidesteps ranges.
The Gothic fire broke out 10 days ago near the Big Dome Mountain. It was a wildfire that just got a little bit out of control, but it's within heavily restricted military airspace and land closed to the public. So, yeah, it's over Area 51. It got a lot of folks talking. You know, I joked online, did something get out, you know, and you wouldn't go either way, Dan, would you?
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't at all. I just threw it into ChatGPT just to see what it's saying. And it said it began with a lightning strike, which is very convenient, isn't it?
Start of an A.J. Hartley, Tom DeLonge novel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It began with a lightning strike at Area 51. Yeah. Or what people knew as Area 51. Dan, fire through some questions. That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee, or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks. My new book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, is now available to pre-order wherever books are sold, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Waterstones. Explore the UFO phenomenon through 34 cases from throughout the world, with accompanying pictures and maps in a beautiful hardback edition or download for your Kindle. Links available in the podcast description below.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.